sort of give you the lay of the land. We're still waiting for Ray, and I hope he manages to get. He did say he was coming, so I'm counting him at his word. But I will get rid of some of the housekeeping items first. Okay. So first of all, and I will say this again when Ray shows up, I want to really thank all of you for being willing to throw your names in the hat.
Because they are vying for a volunteer position, and they have work that has to be done on the side, and there's a lot of hours that go into doing a good job at this. So thank you very much for being willing to take that on. And make sure I got the good stuff. Okay, so we had Meet the Candidates for several years. I can't count how many. I know I personally started doing this when I think when I was BCA director or something.
At least 10 years.
Oh, is that you? Oh my God, it's speaking back to me.
Margaret, this is God.
It's terrible. So anyway, it seemed like it's been a good idea to have a chance at least for everyone to meet who is ostensibly going to be representing you, and also important for you to meet your constituents. And that's one reason why I am recording this via Zoom, but I'm not intentionally did not want to Zoom it per se, because I want people to be here present. These people have to be present, you know, for the meetings that happen once a month, and everyone else can watch from the luxury of their living rooms or whatever. At least once every 2 or 3 or 4 years, it's nice for you guys to have to come out and actually talk to them. So I think that's one reason why we're doing it this way. I'm planning to have everyone just going down the row or whichever we start and have a 3-minute introduction. So they can say you probably know these people and they probably think you know them, but I think they should have a chance to either, it's whatever you guys want to say about yourselves, your histories, your past, your interests, what you want to do on the board, whatever, but it's going to be 3 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. And then we'll start with the Q&A out here. And I want to have everyone have a chance to ask at least one question before you get your second question, okay? So we'll do it that way. That's kind of the extent of my moderation is I pick on the people that are going to ask the question. It's going to be a question that you may have it sort of directed at an individual, but I want to have it framed in such a way that all of them can respond to some aspect of that question. So that's pretty much the format I want to use, is that everyone answers the same questions. Okay, so 2 minutes per response. So depending on how many questions we have, I didn't do the math, but we have 2 full hours. I'm not sure, we don't have to take that much time, but I don't really want to run over that. So we'll just keep it going. And I have this piece of paper up here in case you guys run out of questions. I have some fill-in questions, but I'm not the questioner, you are. Okay, so I think that's all that I had as far as rules or how this thing runs. Oh, and Tina is keeping track of the time. So she's got a... they can see, yes. So the 3-minute timer for each of the intro talks and the 2-minute timer for the question, for the response.
2 minutes per response.
2 minutes per response per question. And does anyone happen to have Ray Gardner's number on speed dial or taxable or anything? I don't know if he's on some call or something. I kind of hate to start without him, but on the other hand, I think we would have to start without him.
Can I just add to one?
Just wanted to add that when I first got on town council, I think it was in 1996, I was told that one of my first duties was to be the host of the Meet the Candidates. So Meet the Candidates in Boulder has been around a long time. Just so you know.
That's right. You just call me.
Okay, so why don't we get started with the introductions then? And
this thing is ostensibly working, so
okay.
Okay, so that was really scary. okay, who wants to start? Whichever end, we'll just go down the table.
I'll start.
Okay.
Okay, my name is Cindy Wilson. My mom's Donna Wilson. I grew up in Boulder. I graduated from Escalante High School. I took BYU Independent High School study courses, and so I completed my senior year, my junior year. Then I went to the military. I was an Army medic. I was stationed in Georgia, Hawaii. And then I got out and I went on a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Tampa, Florida. And then after Tampa, Florida, I went to BYU. I put myself through school and I worked 35 hours a week and kept a full schedule at BYU. I went to airborne school, needed to jump out of airplanes when I was at BYU. And then after I got my degree, I went back into the Army. I went to Desert Storm as a branded butter bar lieutenant. And I got out when I was a captain. I had a daughter. She was like two, so I decided to get out. And I worked for a cell phone company in Georgia. I was an operations manager. And I did it for about 4 years. And then I switched over to Sprint, and I was a senior RF field engineer for Sprint for 10 years. Then my dad died, and I came to Boulder. And then after 3.5 years, I went to Elsinore, bought a house in Elsinore, and then unfortunately, I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to serve my mom right now, and I'm here till I die. Just dig a hole up there and don't be in it. Near my grandmother, you know, because she was very special to me. So that's basically how much I use. Oh, I got more. I don't really want to talk anymore.
You were on town council before. That might be
yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, come on, that part. When I lived here before, I was an advanced EMT for the ambulance. I'm sorry, they took it away after I left. I also was on the town planning commission before I went on town council. Then I was on town council. And I want to serve this community because it's near and dear to my heart. And I believe in being fair to both the people and to adhere to the ordinances that we've established. I believe that if people don't like an ordinance, then maybe it should be changed and it should be examined for that purpose. I believe in supporting our small businesses in Boulder because it's vitally important. And I don't believe in doing anything that will affect a small business from being able to maintain their business in a way that serves the town and serves them. And they employ people in town, and that's important. And so you've got to keep this capitalistic circle going around. I'm grateful for everybody here that took time out to come. It's going to be a beautiful evening.
Thank you.
Turn my mic on. I'm a little older than Cindy, so I'm not going to go through my whole history. That would be the 3 minutes. When I got to Boulder, we've been channeled from here, as you know, so most of you are familiar with us. She's a local. I've been coming here for about 50 years, so I'm a move-in, like most of you are. I recognize, you know, everybody in here, so I've been here long enough to do that. I'm a retired science teacher, so my classroom management skills come in handy in meetings sometimes. So I'm thankful that I did that for a living and for rare. But when I retired, we moved to Boulder. And I still wanted to serve. Boulder is a wonderful town. It's where we planned on spending the rest of our life. And I thought, well, we should volunteer and and do things for the community. It's a small community. There's a lot of work to be done. So first thing I did was I got onto the park committee. Chaplain Tom Jerome was here, if you remember Tom. He invited me to be on the park committee. Back then it was a pasture. So you can see we've come a long way since the days of a horse pasture to what we have now, which is a pavilion and restrooms and a park. After that, I decided to run for town council and ended up being on the town council for 6 years. I think I picked Cindy's last 2 years when she left. So I did that for 6 years, and there were a lot of issues that, you know, I thought were important to Boulder, and I thought we had a great town council. We've always had great town councils. People that have worked with me and volunteers. You know, I can't say enough about the number of people, and probably everybody in here, if I look long enough, has volunteered to do something in town. You know, we are a volunteer town, from fire fighters, planning commission, board of adjustments, right on down the line. We have a lot of committees, a lot of people that do work for us, and I've appreciated everybody stepping up. After being on the town council, I became the mayor. When Bill Mews retired, I became the mayor and took over. So that was for 4 years. Again, I'm proud of what we were able to do. And I still have to give most of the credit to volunteer groups. You know, town council, we serve you, but we have to have ideas of how and what we can do, but we certainly can't do it on our own. We have to have people that are volunteers, and I've appreciated, you know, we have a fire council. Your board of adjustment I left out, that was created. We have people serving on that. We have a tree board. You know, so the number of people that volunteer is astounding. And one of the things I did as mayor is I recognized everybody that I could that had volunteered up to that point. Every month, it was a different group that we recognized for their volunteer work. And I thought that was important, and I still think it's important. You know, so I have a few things that I didn't get around to. I ran for the two-year position because I think that, am I done?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll get to that. Rest of the story then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you all for coming here tonight. This is great to see this kind of civic participation. If in a big city you have this percentage of the population at the meeting, you need a football stadium. My name is John Grant, and I'm running for one of the 4-year seats on the town council. I've been on the planning commission for the last 2 years. I guess I'm a little bit here too, but definitely am. I first visited this area in the 1970s. I bought my property in 1997. I built my house and I moved here after I retired. I'm running because I love Boulder and I believe I can make a positive contribution to the town. My platform is pretty simple. Listen to concerns, respect everyone's values, conduct town business efficiently and effectively. Make housing more attainable for working age families, and I'll come back to that one, and support our local businesses and the efforts of self-employed individuals. This is gonna be a big job, but I think I've got the time and energy to perform the town council duties. While I've been on the planning commission, I've emphasized being prepared for meetings, listening to community input, and applying the rules consistently and impartially. Some of my prior experience was 9 years on the Youth Air Quality Board. While everyone there was special interest, I was the representative of organized environmental groups to the extent we were organized. There were representatives from mining, manufacturing, county government, municipal government positions. You had to work across all those constituencies to get anything done. I acted as presiding officer of both regulatory and enforcement hearings for the Air Quality Board. Was regarded by both environmental groups and the business representatives as being fair in applying the rules. And I think that's really an important thing in government, is to be fair and apply the rules consistently. I worked as a project engineer in industry, and I've managed a large number of research grants at the University of Utah. I know how to get work done on time and on budget, and I look forward to working with the mayor and the other council members on the many tasks and duties that are needed for this town to function. Boulder is a great place for children to grow up. I think it's one of the best in the world. But that means that parents need local housing and employment opportunities. I want Boulder to have a thriving elementary school, successful businesses, continued agriculture, and a very importantly, opportunities for people of all ages and backgrounds to interact on civic and cultural activities. To achieve this type of community, we need to respect each other and work together. Again, my name is John Grant, and I appreciate your vote.
Hello, citizens of Boulder. I'm Jim Cavill. I think most of you guys know me. I'm on the town council for the last 2 years. Been working with Water Board for the last 8 years. The reason I want to be on the town council is just for the health, safety, and welfare of this town. I mean, our roads are lacking. We have a ton of different things lacking in this town that we need. We need a maintenance crew to take care of our roads. We do have a lot of volunteers for a lot of stuff, but there's some stuff that we don't have that we do need just to take care of our stuff. Snowplow to make sure that we have all of our stuff taken care of. We shouldn't have to rely on, say, when Farland was alive. We had him with his backhoe. Sam goes through, clears stuff out. Corey does a good job with the stuff, but we need an actual crew. Like, we need some actual people to do the maintenance part of Boulder. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we have. All of our roads are overrun with weeds, trees, everything's like that. So I'm in it for the health, safety, and welfare of the community. My family moved to Boulder in 1979. I was a year and a half old. I went to Boulder Elementary right on this very spot. The building's changed big time, but still at this exact spot. Graduated from Esalenga High School, before joining the military for 3 years as a heavy wheel diesel mechanic. Spent a year and a half in Bosnia deployed. Learned exactly what a hard condition really is. And people think that we have hard conditions here. Now we have it pretty dang easy. So I know the true Boulder. I saw it when I was a kid. I'd love to see it. Like, as an older man, we have a great place to live. And we actually need to kind of accept the growth that we are growing. And we do need the different things in our communities that we have to have in order to grow. So just a couple things. The pathway. Everybody knows I'm seriously for it, just the fact that I grew up here. I got blown off of Highway 12 by semi-trucks on my bicycle down into the ditch. So that's one of the biggest things that we can do. I mean, we can either get ahead of the curve as it's coming, or we can try to chase it, and it's no fun chasing it. I've been the licensed water operator for 8 years at Boulder Farmstead. I know our roads. I know our town. I know the layouts of the town. I know what needs to be done on this. And we're growing. And I think that if you vote for me, I think we're going to have somebody that will actually know and care how we actually grow. So thank you.
Yeah, there isn't enough resolution on that dial. Right? My own. My name is Josh Ellis. I've lived in Boulder 15 years, so over a third of my life. I came here on a bicycle after riding across the Mojave Desert in the spring winds, which there's a sure sign you don't live in the desert when you ride a bike across the Mojave Desert in the spring. So learn all about wind on that one. Went to college at Oregon State University. I have undergraduate degrees in bioengineering and philosophy. And for work, I don't think a lot of people actually know what I do. I started out doing odd jobs here, kind of abandoned my career. And Jill and I earned all the money that we used to buy and initially build out our property to live on from the town of Boulder. Then I went online. I kind of grew to a point where I could access that, and I started a consulting firm, and now I do medical device product development, consulting, and regulatory affairs. Like, what does that actually mean? It means that I am the sole representative in the moment for about $50 million of client revenue to the most powerful regulatory body in the world, which is the FDA. They can destroy your inventory, recall all of your product, and force you to shut down sales, all with no appeals process whatsoever on site. So that's what I do for work. I have clients all over the world. I work for myself. I set my own schedule. So that allows me the flexibility to volunteer a lot, which I've done. I've been on the fire department for 13 years and been on the BCA for maybe a decade now. It was a big part of revamping the 4th of July many years ago. Help my neighbors as much as I can with whatever I have, that sort of thing. I guess, you know, why am I running? I would say Boulder hasn't changed a whole lot in the 15 years I've been here. And I feel like if 15 years from now we can say the same thing, there's a certain amount of success there and it won't be an accident. Change is inevitable, but it's also foreseeable and hopefully controllable, or we guide it in a certain direction that we would like to go. Yeah, I guess that's my take. Thanks.
And Ray will not be able to join us until later at the most. He's over with his son in Escalante, and they just won the
Asian Cross Country Meet.
It's not getting an award. He's over there right now, so we probably will not be seeing Ray tonight. But Ray and Steve are both running for that 2-year slot that is a fill-in for Steve Johnson, who left. So that's why that is a 2-year slot. Typically, the town council slots are 4-year positions. So, okay, just show of hands, how many people do have a question tonight that you want to ask? Okay, not a huge amount. Okay, so we'll start taking your questions. I'll kick in a couple that might nudge you into a thought you might have had. So we'll start from there. Who would like to be first? Hanson, did you?
Oh, no, I'm not going.
Jeff? Someone's got to be first. Okay, oh, and I'm actually getting this.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I can just speak. I have a top of my list. All the things you did when you started, so I appreciate the effort that everybody is putting in. Some of you are new council members, and some of you have been on council before. Is that not close enough? Is that closer? There's always a honeymoon period when you get on a new body for the first time, and there's lots of laws and ordinances and procedures to learn, okay? And I wonder what each of you feel is the responsibility of an elected town council member to learn the requirements of the role before you get on the body. What level of understanding of the role and responsibilities should an elected council member have in advance of taking the office? How long is a reasonable period of time for a town council member to have as a honeymoon period to learn and adjust to the responsibilities of the role? And does it seem reasonable for us to have the excuse that we're still learning for years after a person has taken the role?
You want to direct that to the initial person, or okay? Where do you want to start?
Who would like to kick it off?
Oh.
Okay.
So I don't have any excuse for not knowing the ordinances and policies and the procedures. I should know better than anybody. When I was on town council, I had specific jobs that I had to do. So I had to know the ordinances that applied to that, the policies, etc. When I became mayor, and I think Judy Green can attest to this, Bill Muse isn't here, you have to know a little bit about everything. And so
I know the ordinances pretty well. I know the policies and procedures. I shouldn't have any excuse not to come prepared the first meeting and get to work, and I will. Those of you that know me know that I will be prepared. I will do my homework. I will make decisions. I will keep meetings short because I think we owe that to the public. We owe the public getting our work done before we show up for the meeting. So thanks for the question, Jeff, and I will have no excuses. I will get right to work, and there is no learning curve other than maybe a little bit that I've missed in the last few years, but I've been coming to the meetings regularly, so that wouldn't be an excuse either.
Josh, do you want to kick off your response? We'll just go down the row then.
Sure, yeah. I guess part of what I left out about what I do is I read and interpret international and federal rules and regulations around medical devices and test standards and all that, and then argue about that, the interpretation and application of those rules and regulations with regulatory agencies around the world. So sitting down and reading, actually our ordinances from my perspective are quite short and pretty easy to get through compared to a lot of stuff I do. So, I mean, that is our job as town council members, right? That's the fundamental thing we do, is administer the ordinances and maintain compliance of the general plan. That's fundamentally what we're all signing up to do here. So that's like the job, right? So you start with that. Like, there's obviously a lot of in and outs and nuance on particular things, the history of things, and that's where the rest of the community comes in, right? They fill you in and they help you know the context, who did what, where, when, and that sort of thing. But you know, I will say I've definitely grown to appreciate how difficult it is to run a good meeting, watching Steve leave and then watching the new council try and figure it out. It's an impressively difficult thing to do with the Roberts rules. And there's a lot to learn there, but you know, we just had that training, and so it's all very doable. You know, I think the bar should be high.
It is our job to know not every one of the ordinances. We should know every single one, but we do have a ton of ordinances in here, and we have ordinances in here that are out there that nobody is actually, they're not followed. So some of the ordinances that we do have, I think, yeah, we do need to go back, take a look at, get rid of some of the ordinances that are not being enforced, different things like that. But most of the ordinances, they're, like Josh said, they're easy to find. We have a super easy system set up now with the new town system on the computer. You can find anything you need. There is no excuse for not knowing it. And if you don't know it, at least try to say that you don't know it. Like, don't try to BS somebody into it. So, yeah.
Well, a couple things here. One thing is that I've been in a lot of different organizations, different boards, and they're all a lot the same because people are always involved the same. And you've got to respect people's opinions. You've got to make sure everyone can feel informed and involved. And that dynamic is true, I think, whether you're running a grade school civics club and trying to decide what kind of cookies to have for the end of the year party, or our town council, or their quality board. I really appreciate what the mayor has done, stepping into a big job, a complicated job with lots of duties. I think the council really needs to support the mayor and help get things ready for meetings so that the work is organized, the packet is out in advance of the meeting so people have a chance to understand what things are going to be coming up for the business. A lot of work needs to be done between meetings. I spent a lot of time on the planning commission between meetings trying to get ready. So I think I know how to work in an organization. I've been working with Bold Ordinances now, especially the land use part, for the last couple of years, but I've been attending Boulder Town Council meetings in person off and on for decades as well. So that's a long history. I think I'll be able to hit the ground running and contribute from day one.
Well said, everybody. I'm also experienced in having been on the Planning Commission and the Town Council. I'm also experienced with my knowledge of ordinances. And I really think there should be an enforcement officer for the issues where people do the wrong thing, contrary to what the ordinance states. I don't like that. So I'm depending that either change things or enforce the ordinances that are already on the books. The ordinances have been well thought out. And anytime there's been a problem like barking dogs, you know, then a barking dog ordinance was created. It's important to be prepared. I really admire Elizabeth because she's always prepared for town council meetings. She's done her research and her input is very on point. And I'm not a fan of big long meetings because I don't think that you have to have long meetings to accomplish your goals. And if you have an agenda that's 2 pages long, well, maybe you should trim it down or combine things. I think that on a town council, you need to respect your peers and their opinions, and you need to communicate in a way that's not demeaning or insulting and argumentative. I enjoy that Robert's Rules class, the Zoom class that we took. That was excellent training. And I hope to see that in town council meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question. Who would like to do it? Sorry.
Judith Guy here. And I'm speaking representing Boulder Wildfire Council. Our members ask that all candidates elected to the town council will support wildfire mitigation projects and actively work on developing the town's codified emergency operations plan, known as the EOP. And I appreciate a response from each of you. Thank you.
Jim, why don't you start?
All right. I've already been slightly working with Judith on the fire, trying to help out with that. It is definitely something we do need to get going, and I'm fully backed it. It's part of what I was coming back to saying about having an actual maintenance group for the town. All of our streams, all of our roads, everything like that have overgrown bushes on them. Tall grass, everything like that. It is a huge fire hazard. We have a bunch of dead willows, cottonwood trees, and all of our irrigation ditches, things like that. I think it is a huge thing. I think she's doing an awesome job of what we're actually doing on this. So I'd be more than happy to help out whatever ways I can. So.
John?
Okay. Well, certainly I'm fully supportive of these efforts. One thing I've often mentioned is that we're a small town with limited resources, so we shouldn't be trying to invent solutions as much as look at what has worked elsewhere and what hasn't worked elsewhere and benefit from those lessons. Given that, I think on both fire mitigation and implementation of the emergency plan, this is basically just like any other project engineering, you set your goals, you set a timetable, you figure out what budget you have to work with,
And you very systematically try to make progress month by month toward the goals you set for the year. And then the next year, you make another step. So I think this is something that, you know, efficient management by all involved will really help keep us moving.
Yes, and I'm thankful we have a wildfire council. Garfield County rated Boulder as the number one risk for catastrophic wildfire. We're the top one. So we went to work a couple of years ago to get a fire management plan written. Unfortunately, other things interfered with it, more emergency plans, but they all sort of came together. But with that's one of the goals I have. We need to finish that. We need to go back through. The last time the emergency operation plan was updated was 2008. It's useless right now, basically, because chain of command, things like that, they don't work. We didn't get that far. I'm thank you, Judith, for the question, because one of the things we really need to get on, if we're the number one risk for catastrophic wildfire and we have a drought, we better get moving and we better recognize the fire council is important and we need to give it our support and help however we can. It's the top priority.
I appreciate Judith's hard work on this because she's been working on this. At least I know for at least a year, 2018, a long time. We're very fortunate that we haven't had a catastrophic fire. But we're just one cigarette butt away from having a catastrophic fire. And it's good to have a plan to know what to do in the event that happens, because if there isn't a plan, and it isn't thought out, and it shouldn't be. They should run simulations so everybody knows their part in the activity. Can it happen? And I believe that it's very important to pay special attention to this need that we have, even though we haven't had anything happen, something could happen. And we should all know what to do, because if we don't know what to do, then we're all going to run around like chickens that ain't off.
And they do differ. We've had two fires on our property in the last 5 years. Wow. So they do happen. And none of them have anything to do with any way there, but they do happen. They're scary.
Can you judge?
Yeah, and I guess kind of approaches as a firefighter that is sort of the first line of defense. You know, right now our truck's broken down and that's pretty scary. So then what? What's our contingency plan for that? We don't have one that I'm aware of. I don't, yeah, it's a big problem. And it's good to know. Yeah, so everyone knows. It's like the big white truck is broke down. So we just have the little red truck right now. We need a new computer for it. So I think in terms of like communicating frontline defenses with the plan and having contingency plans, it's super important. And then also the work of the Wildfire Council is immensely valuable. And definitely thank you for persevering through this all these years. It's interesting. I'd like to see Garfield County's assessment of the other towns and learn more about that. Thanks.
Thank you, myself. Next question. Who wanted? Okay.
I know there was mandatory training on Robert Rules of Order, which I think it's come down to that was a really good thing to probably do for anybody serving the kind of governmental offices, which a town council is. And I think everyone was required to take it. And I would like to know if all of you took the required training
and what you, what the biggest benefit of that was to you, and how you see that helping the town council deal with issues going forward.
John, why don't you start?
Well, I certainly took the training, and I did a couple of trainings. There was also one specifically for planning commission that I took. I've been working with Robert's Rules for many years without the Air Force before. The advice from the governor's office was to use formal meeting procedures strictly because when a meeting gets hot and argumentative, having rules in place is a way that the chair can bring it back and keep things under control so that people can speak and be heard without disrupting other people. So I think the biggest benefit to me is that we all now have a much more common understanding of how a meeting should run. And if we have that shared understanding, it's going to go much smoother. And I've already seen progress on it. So I thank everyone else who took the training and paid attention.
Yes, I took the training also. I took 2 pages of notes. And even though we've used a modified Robert's Rules for years in Boulder and did pretty successful with it, there are always things that we can improve. And I'm with John. I think it's important that every committee, town council, planning, our committee, whatever, Robert's Rules speeds up your meetings, makes them more efficient, allows for public input where it's necessary, but it certainly makes life easier, I think, for everyone if we have a common set of rules. So thank you for the question.
I also attended the training, and as I said before, it was the most excellent training, and I'm eager to see those things implemented in our own town council meetings. I want to see how many point of orders come up in a meeting. But it was excellent training, and I've had to conduct many meetings in my life, and it's important to have guidelines and rules that everybody adheres to and obeys, and then that makes for a seamless meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, I didn't take the training for the same reason that Ray's not here, because I have children and my wife was out of town, and the meeting was from 5 to 8 p.m. on a school night. However, it was pre-discussed beforehand that it's recorded, and you know, obviously that's part of the required homework of becoming a council member for sure. I mean, I have some exposure to it. Steve calls it a modified Robert. So I would say the BCA board's been using a watered down version of that for many years.
Yeah.
But it's way different when you get public stuff involved and public facing. So there's a lot to learn there, but it's a 3 hours of recording, and you know, it's a difficult thing for me to do.
So are you going to take the training?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When are you going to take it before election?
It's recorded.
What?
The training was recorded.
Yeah. But are you going to take it before election so you know everybody went through the same mandatory training?
No, not necessarily.
Is that up to you or the town council?
So it is. He's only required 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
like,
before the election. If he's elected, you can see.
Yeah, like.
I don't know if anyone could hear what you said, Jessica, so. I'll just rephrase. Basically, there's not a requirement for people running for office to have taken the training. It was offered to everybody if they were able to, but certainly before they take their seat, they wouldn't be required to take the training. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I did take the training. It was absolutely awesome. The ladies, little dinosaurs, kind of made it work the whole entire little training session. And it's actually, and it wasn't Robert's Rules, it was actually Jurassic Parliament that we were actually taking on that. So just putting that out there. And the best thing I think that we got from it was how you can actually unify as a council without having to be like, I don't know, difficult with one another. I think it taught us how to be more aligned with each other, or actually not aligned, but how to get along with each other better, how to like actually look at the questions that we're actually being asked better. And just the rules of how we're supposed to be running stuff. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we do need help on. But yeah, I thought it was an awesome class, and I did, I learned a ton from it. So.
Okay. Who has another question up there?
That's fine.
My question has to do with priorities. I think for any legislative body, the biggest question is what do you spend time on? There's clearly more issues that need to be addressed in the town than the town council has time to address, evidenced by the density of the agenda, and the fact that the fire truck's broken and it's not on the agenda. My question for each of you is, what do you think as a member of town council or as a body, what do you think the most important issue is that needs to be addressed by town council that is not currently being addressed?
Why don't we start with Cindy?
Well, like Steve pointed out earlier, that when you're on the town council, you're assigned a certain set of responsibilities. And those are things that you're supposed to focus on and not drop the ball on, because you're the person that's responsible. I think it's really important to listen to the people, what the people want, what their concerns are, and how those can be addressed, and also adhere to the established ordinances of town. I don't think we should get I think that when we're going to do things that are going to impact a small business, I think we really need to consider, we might be really excited about some idea, but if it impacts somebody and their livelihood, then maybe we shouldn't be so gung-ho about it. Maybe we should consider the impact it has on, because the town receives money from all these businesses, you know, especially the hospitality businesses and motels and things like that. So, they benefit the town, so why would we as a town want to do something that's going to be a hindrance to the business? And I think I think always the number one priority as a council is that we are enforcing our ordinances, that we're supporting the ordinances that are on the books. So many problems have arisen in this community of people who are doing things that aren't, they do them off book, they do them, they build something and then they tell them to tear it down afterwards because they didn't do it according to ordinances. I know somebody who built a whole in-law suite and they did that under the radar and nobody said anything. So I think that we need to enforce our ordinances and we have less problems.
Yeah, as an educator, I guess I always start with the school. I think we need to make sure our kids are safe, that they are supported at school, that they have opportunities. But then it blossoms out from there because we need to support families. That means supporting businesses that employ those families. So it kind of mushrooms out, but if I were to center myself on something that's really important to me, it's our children and the families and the businesses that kind of go together with all that. You know, I want our kids to have a great experience. I want them to be safe, and that would be my priority. So it all intertwines, and But we can do concrete things to help our school, our businesses, and our families. And that's what we should be looking at.
All right. Well, certainly, the first order of business, everyone has to be just taking care of the ongoing business that needs to be done at that point in time. The annual budget, filling vacancies when someone resigns, approving the checks. That's just, it takes a good chunk of the meeting that it has to be done. I think that the biggest thing is that we're going to be facing in the coming year is that there was a massive change in the state law regarding subdivisions and land use in the last legislative session. Towns our size don't have until December of 24 to come into compliance. That's going to take a lot of time for the town to do it. But if we don't, it's going to be anything anyone wants to do with land use, they're going to get away with because we won't be in compliance with state law. So we're going to have to do some massive ordinance rewriting there. More importantly, though, in the process of rewriting our ordinances, I think we need to be, as a town, working to a positive vision of what we want in the future rather than responding in fear of what might happen under the worst possible case. And that gets to my two favorite issues, which are housing for working-age families, which ties to the viability of the school, the ability of our businesses to have employees, the ability of the fire department to have volunteers, the ability to have EMTs for the ambulance, all are tied to housing for working age people. And while we're working on improving housing, we need to protect Boulder's care, protect agriculture, and protect the open space. So I think that's the priority as far as what we want to accomplish as a positive vision moving forward.
So right now, I'm in charge of the roads, the dump, and EMS. And our roads and EMS are our two biggest needs, I think, that we actually need to take care of. Just for the fact that, like Josh said, our fire truck is broken down. It doesn't need to be on the agenda because we're trying to find the parts to fix it. We have the money for it. We're trying to get the parts to actually fix it. So, and also the EMTs. We have a new thing I'm going to discuss it tomorrow in the town board meeting about insurance for EMS personnel for volunteer firefighters and volunteer EMTs. That's our biggest thing, and our roads. Our roads need more work, and like I said before, the trouble on all of the dead branches on the sides of the roads, all of the dead brush on the sides of the road. Lower Boulder Road is the royal pain just for the fact that it's not even the town's road. I mean, it's the town's business, but it's all on private property. It's all the different things going through there. This is the things that we actually need to actually work on and figure out on it, because it is huge. I mean, we have more traffic in Boulder now than we ever have. And going down Lower Boulder in some places, you can't get two cars through there. And what's the solution on it? I don't know. It's with the town and trying to figure out with the landowners that actually own the land going through where the town roads are. So that's my two biggest things that we definitely need to go work on, the roads, EMS. Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, I always think about it kind of like quadrants. You have your important and urgent, your urgent and unimportant sort of, you know. And that's mostly the doldrums of your day-to-day that need to be addressed, the vacancies and so forth, like John's referring to. And that takes a considerable, I mean, that's a full job in and of itself, right? But there are strategic turning points few and far between, and then you have to think in terms of opportunity costs. So, you know, even the mere effort going into the town not planning the pedestrian path, what is the cost of that as a community? What else could we have been working on together? What else could we have been talking about that is strategic according to the general plan, which is our guidance document? I guess I would say that actually achieving and executing our general plan over the next 20 years is going to be a miracle. Basically,
It's not a trivial thing to manifest a reality that the general plan outlines for this community, given the changes at hand. So I think, you know, that some amount of time needs put towards long-term strategic thinking and decision-making and examining things from an opportunity cost perspective, both in terms of bringing the community together or not, and are we actually moving towards the vision outlined in our general plan or not? Thanks.
Hello, my name is Madeline, for those who I haven't met. I am a newer resident of Boulder and a board member of Grand Staircase Partners. I am curious to hear how you all perceive the protected status of the monument and how you perceive its impacts or benefits to our local economy.
How about John Sterno?
Well, I have been working on Utah wilderness issues since the mid-1980s. So my sympathies for the monument are deep. I think that the monument is a positive thing for these communities because although the tourism has impacts, it's also a source of money, it's a source of jobs, but it's also an amenity that brings people here. There are some beautiful studies that show that communities near wildland areas are much more prosperous economically. And the part of the reason is people like retirees who settle down there and bring the money with them and help build these communities. On the other hand, I have had some nice conversations with Riker Haas, and I've gotten to know him a lot more since his father passed away. And I don't think Brian was always friendly to me, but never very conversational. Riker's been much more open. And, you know, I can see that there's some strong feelings on the part of the ranchers. And I think that both need to be respected as well. But that often the devil's in the details. And we have the monument management plan of the public comment now. I think there's a lot of specific things that can constructively be adjusted to protect the land, protect the resources, but also respect the people who have been here for a long time.
We owned our restaurant when the monument was actually put in place, and we saw the increase of people that are brought in, and it is a great increase of the business and everything else. The infrastructure that we actually get from the state to actually support the monument, I think it's kind of ridiculous. They put the big five and have all these advertisements everywhere. And when I was stationed in the military, I even saw Bryce Canyon in Kaiserslautern, Germany, going across the billboards. I'm like, holy cow, that was in 95. I couldn't even imagine what it's like now. So it is good, but it also overruns the town with the trash, the different, how many people are coming in. We need better infrastructure to actually handle the amount of people that we have coming in. And we need a safer place for them to be able to enjoy our town instead of being up walking down Highway 12 or walking down the gravel pathway. That's why I'm for the pathway, is for the fact that we do need a safe place because of the monument and because of the different things that we have around us, Capitol Reef, Bryce Canyon, all these different places. We are busy. No matter what we try, no matter what we do, we are busy. People are here, and everybody that has a business or even don't have a business, we still benefit from having a prosperous town. So I'm in for it. I think that we do need to have different ways of trying to deal with the amount of people and the amount of everything that it comes with us. So.
This is a great question. Pretty interesting. Had some really great interactions during the general plan revision committee working groups with Kevin Gardner, and we actually added wording around grazing back into the general plan or put it in to begin with as a result of those interactions as a group, as a committee. I guess What I wouldn't want to see is the monument turn into a national park. That's that, you know, the way it sits and is, I mean, fighting over it the way that's been happening is pretty dramatic. I also think it is, I mean, my analysis of the preferred alternatives came out of the byways. I didn't even look at the plan itself yet, but you know, it looks like one of the alternatives involves like basically making it impossible to go get cedar posts for anyone anywhere. Like, that's stupid. Why would they do that to us that live here? Our footprint is this big here, you know? So it's a double-edged sword. It's, you know, I was a tree hugger in college. I get the environmentalist slant. And as someone who lives here and knows the importance culturally as a community, the grit that we get as a result of working with and through and on the land, it's critically important that folks be able to do that. And if we can't, this town's going to go to hell, a very affluent, great Starbucks version of hell. And that's, and none of us want that. You know, none of us want that. So, I mean, I guess, you know, that would be, that's all I can say is, you know, I see both sides of it. And it's very specific on the specific issue at hand that's being addressed at the moment. You know, it's not blanket for me. Thanks.
I agree with both Josh and John in the fact that it is a double-edged sword. I mean, it's a great thing. That's my staircase. But then, if it impinges on existing cattle ranchers, my parents had a ranch when it was being designated, and I know my father was really against it. I believe in preservation, but there has to be some give and take because. If you take someone's livelihood away because you've created this political monster that takes away the grazing rights, and if you can't go get a cedar post, you know, when you want to go get a cedar post out in the wild, you know, it's just unacceptable because it never should impinge on people's independent businesses. And I mean things like ranches. Self-employed. But we also have to preserve things as well. And I like that it does bring a lot of tourists into the area. So that in turn supports the local businesses, which in turn supports the town because of the tax dollars that the town gets. So I think there has to be a careful balance between the two. Because yes, one thing's really important, preservation, but then people whose livelihoods depend on their grazing rights and et cetera, then that's not fair to them. And so I think it's just a delicate balance between the two. And I agree, don't ever make it a national park. And I'm against the pathway, by the way. They can walk down that little brown trail down alongside the road. That's perfectly fine. It's not like you have 100 people, you know, trying to make their way down that little trail at a time. So I guess that one.
Yeah, as a scientist, when the monument was created, I thought it was a wonderful thing because there's so much out there that is scientific and needs to be discovered and documented. There's no other place like it in the world. We need to recognize that. When town council and was mayor, then the reality sets in that, you know, that's not all that's out there. We have people that have made living for hundreds of years out there. My beef was always a little bit with the central government not providing us more milk money, payment in lieu of taxes. You block up a large chunk of land like that, but you don't give the communities the money to manage it, to grow with it, and so on. I think that's a big issue. I wish we fought harder to get that money that we really deserve. And so that's always bothered me. The other thing that's always bothered me is we do not staff it with management people that could be out there working with local ranchers, local tourism businesses. We need more land managers. That creates jobs for Boulder. We need that. And it almost is like we've been overlooked when it comes to financially helping us. When you block up land, you should financially help us manage it the way it should be managed. And right now, it's not there. But that's the fight I think we have to fight to keep the monument as we like it. But also that they're paying a fair share, everybody that wants it. So that's my opinion.
I don't remember if there was another hand out here. Somebody. Oh, okay. Judy.
Okay, my question is just kind of covered a little bit, but what's your vision of Boulder in the next, say, 15 years? Where do you think we'll be, or where would you like us to be? And what can we do to keep it as rural as we are now, but also enjoy some growth? Because it's a big question. And we all have different ideas about it. So I'd love to hear your message.
He hasn't started anything. Kind of trying to move that around. Josh, do you want to take it?
Sure, yeah. Another good question. I guess, like I said, I think if it was sufficiently similar to what it is now, that would be good. But if it's that with twice as many tourists, that's you know, probably getting dangerous. And definitely three times as many tourists. There are forces that are promoting basically industrial tourism that are a threat to our community as we enjoy it today. And that, you know, and that is partly out of our control. So how do we deal with that? You know, how do we address providing affordable, or that we would call it now attainable housing opportunities for younger folks, when the most likely outcome of any broad scale stroke change to like lot size, for example, is most likely just going to open it up to the next lowest economic class of second homeowner. That's a real concern. We have to be incredibly intelligent on how we implement these policies so that we have kids in the school, so that we have young families here, so that we have employees, that we have, you know, a multi-generational community, which is what we all want. So, you know, how do we do that? It's a lot of, quite frankly, it's a lot of really awkward, frustrating conversations and a whole lot of listening and a lot of back and forth over and over and over and over and over again until we start to see things together. It takes a lot of us with a lot of different perspectives to bring up a lot of things that none of us have thought about yet in terms of unintended consequences. Pulling those out of the woodwork and analyzing them critically and trying to mitigate them when we make decisions. Be willing to make mistakes. Be willing to revoke things that we've implemented when they are obviously not working. You know, we need to be willing to do all these things. I mean, it all takes, this is a painful amount of effort. And patience.
So in 15 years, I saw just a kid, I saw Boulder change huge in 15 years. I saw the lodge go from a completely huge pasture where I used to milk cows in the barn right where the lodge is right now to the huge lodge that supplies a ton of money for our community. the growth part, we are going to grow. There's no doubt about that. And if we don't do it smart, we could have some super bad and serious consequences for the town. And it's not just the town that would suffer, it'd be all the everybody around us. I mean, it's just the way that it is right now, we have people moving in all the time. I know because I install their water meters. I know exactly when somebody new comes in or when they have to fill out for welcome minutes or anything else like that. So I've seen the growth. We are going to grow. The way that I think we should approach it is I would love to see the pathway put in down there, and I'd also love to see a pathway be put in from the pavilion down to the elementary school so we can actually have a safe place for our kids. Have the pathway come all the way up from the inside from the path in front of the town hall and all the way up to the museum to actually give somebody a safe place to actually ride their bike or be able to walk in town or to take their kids on a stroller or for people with disabilities to be able to enjoy the same stuff that we already enjoy. That's what I'd love to see in town. And I think it would benefit almost every single one of us in the long run. So thank you.
Okay. I'm going to talk about one of the things, but I want to say what I don't want to see in the next 15 years. And that is to see our working ranches being chopped up into investment second homes. And that, unfortunately, is the thing that's the easiest thing to do under our current ordinances. And that's why I feel we do have to make some changes. As a positive, I want to see Boulder to be at the type of place where people from a lot of different cultures and demographics and political views and religions can all bring their families and settle down and contribute to the community. There are some things that we can use as models that can be used. Well, it was controversial at the time, but I think we're all relieved that John Austin put the Boulder Creek Canyon Ranch under a conservation easement. We know that beautiful valley is not going to be chopped up into second homes. That's the tool that can be used that can give financial benefits to the landowners and protect the open space. We need to explore other opportunities like that. Over at the east end of Escalante, Maple Works built a wonderful fourplex that's got four families living in it. Beautiful house. Now, some people say it looks a little ugly because the landscaping hasn't been done or they don't like the color. But I'd say it's great that we're able to create three-bedroom apartments that rent for $800 a month for four families. Something like that could be done here in Boulder if we come together and do the same sort of thing that Escalante did to bring these projects about. So we want housing, we want to preserve our open space and agriculture. And I think that includes both traditional ranching, as well as some of the more innovative small-scale agriculture, organic produce, things like that, that can bring higher value per acre and therefore be more economically viable.
When we moved here about 15 years ago, the population estimate was around 200 to 250. Cheryl and I were reading the other day, the latest census, we're almost 400 and maybe over 400 people now, which is pretty incredible growth for a small community. Not surprising, I guess, when you think about it. When I was mayor, town council, we had a lot of pressure to be the Bryce Canyon model. Boulder's not being with the program, I heard all the time. We don't have enough glamping. We don't have enough motels. They wanted us to be different than we are. We resisted that. We stopped taking certain monies from the county because we weren't going to be like the rest of the county. We weren't going to follow the Bryce Canyon, whatever it is. I don't even know what it is now. It's cramming a lot of people into small spaces. I think the thing that we have done, planning commission and town councils, over the years is we have stuck to the general plan as much as we could. We look at it, we go, is this something that fits with what we want? John's correct. We're going to grow. We need to figure out how to grow. But that's our guiding document. It's not been that many years ago that we had working groups on all the different issues We hashed out a lot of things that people wanted and didn't want, and it was put in the general plan. You know, it maybe needed an update sometime soon, but for right now, I think it was the consensus of all the people that lived here, or most of them, because we had a lot of participants. This is what we want it to look like. This is what it is. And I think we just need to go back to our general plan, look at it, try to stay true to it, knowing that things will change, but we can guide the way that it changes.
I believe one of the key things to growth is jobs. If we don't have the jobs, then all the people will come here, but how are they going to support themselves? I believe that in order to, Steve, we need to preserve what makes Boulder great. A lot of people come to this town and then they just want to turn into the place where they just came from. But Boulder's a unique place, and we should honor that uniqueness, and we should support that uniqueness and not try to change it. But I think that as a town council, when plans come up for somebody to create job opportunities, then we should be more flexible in supporting that, because that's where your growth is going to come from. The more jobs you have in town, the more people and families are going to come here, and the better the town will be. There will be more kids in elementary school and in the Escalante High School, which has pitiful numbers. But we have to have those job opportunities to support the people that come here. Or we're just going to have a bunch of vagrants. You know, because these big vagrant in these parts, you know, you just live in a teepee out there in the sagebrush and live off the land, you know, that's a popular thing. So I think that we need to look at how we can increase job opportunities to support the populace. More jobs, more people, more growth. And that's what I'd like to see happen in the next 20 years. And keep the pristineness of Boulder intact.
I have a very, did everyone answer? Did you answer? Okay. I have a non-philosophical question I want to toss out. This area north of the community center has been a parking lot, a storage area, whatnot, for as long as I've been here. I'm wondering, just going down the road, what ideas, if you were able to implement an idea, what one or two ideas would you have for utilizing that space, if any? Okay, Cindy's turn.
I think it's ugly out there. Really ugly. And not representative of the building. And I think that we need to plant some trees and some grass and make it pretty out there. Because it could be made look pretty. I don't think we should be dumping gravel by the building. That's ugly. I think that we need to start putting some landscaping in, but definitely some grass or some nice trees. And, you know, people racing, barrel racing out there, practicing and stuff. And I guess that was one thing, but we're doing nothing to make this look pretty. And it's just flat out ugly.
You're right. It's kind of a dumping ground. You know, plans have been kicked around a lot by the town council over the years, and money's been set aside. Part of it was for more parking, because when we have like the holiday market, it gets dangerous out front. I mean, it really is dangerous for people walking and you know, traffic and the pedestrians and so on. We could use more parking. It doesn't have to be ugly gravel. It can be designed well. But I'm with Cindy. The other thing we always talk about is, you know, this playground is great because they have the, whatever it is, the merry-go-round. And we were told to take that out years and years ago because it's too dangerous. And it's like, not for older kids. They know how to handle it. So, but it's dated. It would be nice to have an area where families could come and their kids could play. We can put more pickleboard. What is it?
Pickleball.
Okay. We can do some things like that that could take up some space and make it much more attractive and give us more things to do if we want. That interests some people, pickleball. Not me especially, but I think it's not bad. So I think we still need to look at developing that area in a nice park manner. And with this 10,000 tree thing that the tree board has proposed, what a great place to start planting some trees and getting some shade. So I think it could be beautiful. It could be productive. It could be useful. But you know, again, we need to know what people want and how they see it being developed. We have the money. We'll just put it, you know, to use. We can build what we want out there.
Okay. I'm going to propose something a little more controversial, and Mark, don't jump all over me, please. When we talk about housing and affordable housing projects, one of the first questions that comes, does the town have any land? Town has some land. It's actually zoned, I think, medium density residential. Might be high density residential. I'll have to look at the map. That would be a wonderful place to have some housing that's de-restricted to public service employees, firefighters, law enforcement, EMTs, school teachers. It would be, and that is something that's perfectly legal, is to have employment-restricted housing like that. It would be an asset to the community because it would provide decent, high-quality, respectable housing for the people who are most essential to our community. It would change the character looking across from some people's houses, but you know, I think we should really consider that. Now I get you on my side to build it and have you help me pick the color. It's not a house there.
Yeah,
like
Mark's
there. Jim? For the north part of it, a park would look absolutely lovely. The ball field would look great, but it's not big enough for a ball field. I know we used to play softball in it as a kid, and we'd be being in cars going by Highway 12. And a park, the water. What is the town going to do for water? We're already using a ton of water, taking care of everything that we have going now. The grounds here, the power over there, we spend a lot of money just on water fees. So if you're going to put in a park up there, what are you going to do with the water? Where are you going to get it? Xeriscaping, like Steve said, there are some beautiful xeriscaping gravel that you can put out there. There's trees that don't require a ton of water. There's all kinds of different things we can do out there. But just throwing grass out there, I think it would be a horrible idea just for the fact, like I said, water for one. And we do need more extra parking for the town hall. That's what that was always put in for, was for the parking for the town hall. We need the access point to get back to the kitchen so we can actually use the kitchen, do everything like that. So, I mean, we do need to upgrade the north side. It does look like a little crap. But a lot of the stuff that's in there, like all of the fill and stuff like that, when we're getting ready to expand the parking lot of the lodge or the park right here, a lot of that fill is going to be taken out. It's not going to be in there anymore. So, it's not going to look as bad. But we do definitely need to do something with it. Next up, probably more parking and xeriscape for some. Take care of some of the area.
I guess it's one of those things that I look at, and as an engineer, I say, what's the problem? So what's the problem with it now? That it looks bad? Okay.
It's empty.
It's under the okay. Well, you know, when you're in a gateway community that has a bunch of millionaires driving through checking Zillow as they cruise by, having a few ugly spots isn't. Yeah, I mean, like having this building get redone, like I remember going into the town council meetings when you froze to death in February because the windows leaked. And I mean, all these things that, like, that's the irony of development. When you make things better for yourself, you're also increasing the curve of heal. And that actively works against what we want to cultivate as a community in the long run, in my opinion, looking at real estate trends and the general plan. I mean, that's a big concern I have with the path is like, wow, that's a huge chunk of curb appeal right there. And if you're the kind of person that's looking for amenities in a great place in the middle of nowhere, you're making it that much better for them. So, you know, do we have the time? What's the opportunity cost for screwing with that over there instead of leaving it? How big are the problems that we're solving? And then what are the solutions? I mean, I don't have an agenda on the north side of the building. I don't have a stance on that issue, I guess. And maybe that makes me a bad candidate. I don't know. But I guess, you know, like getting ideas and then weighing whether the costs are worth the benefits, you know, that's what we do.
Interesting array of answers.
Okay, talk about ugly. We have the ugliest welcome to Boulder signs of anybody in Garfield County. And Jared Taylor has told Jared that it is all will all be paid for. All we have to do is submit a design. So is there something the town council can do to submit a design so we can have better looking welcome to Boulder signs?
Oh, I'll answer first on that. So the BCA came to the town council years ago and said, hey, we want to do something with the welcome to Boulder sign. And then they basically said, we'll come up with a plan and we'll do it. And then it was like one of those things where, well, does anyone really want to get Julian Hatch involved again? You might come out of the woodwork for that one. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. So that was a project that the BCA talked about years ago. And then it didn't end up going anywhere. In part because of the herding cats involved to do it. But yeah, I mean, I think it would be fun to do something like that, especially out of rock, for sure. And it's great, you know, if you wait long enough, the county will pay for it. That's awesome.
That's right. They said they'd pay for it.
Darren said they would pay for it.
Jerry told Jared, the money's there, they'll pay for it. They paid for Henry Mills, they paid for Cannon Mills, they'll pay for ours. All we have to do is submit it.
Okay,
I'll call Jerry Taylor tomorrow and see what we have to do that so okay. You can get rolling. So
that'd be great.
It's on the agenda.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
It's been on the last two
agendas.
It's been
on the agenda. On and on.
Okay.
Years.
It's been okay.
We're not going to talk about it here. Okay.
Yeah.
John, do you have your side?
Well, I think this is definitely the line of you set your you set a goal, you set a plan, you try to work your plan. Month by month you make progress. One ugly fact that I think I know on any board or council, you can't always please everyone. How many of you like the new Utah State flag? You know, I mean, you're not going to get consensus, but at some point you have to make a decision and say, okay, this is the plan that's got the most support within our budget. Let's do it. And if, maybe come on, Terry, let's get it going. I like that idea.
Yeah. If they said they'll pay for it, then why not?
See?
Welcome signs were one of the things that came out of the general plan group meetings that we had. There were 10 or 12 things, and we accomplished most of them. That was one of them. I think we ought to paint the lady back on the rock.
I didn't care about the
When I was on the town council, Mark Nelson actually, Mike Nelson actually was going to do that. And the town wouldn't cooperate because he got permission from whoever controls that area, the Forest Service and FEMA, whatever. You know, got permission, and the town wouldn't meet him, not even a snitch in the way. You remember that? But that's historical. That is such a. When I was a kid, and those long, boring drives, and when I saw the painted lady, I was like, oh, we're almost there. You know? So I think
definitely be sure to pay the lady, you know. And I think it's also an honor of your wife, whose mother, you know, oftentimes involved. My mother's oftentimes involved in painting the painted lady. So I think that that's a historical thing. It really should be done. But besides, I think that, you know, we should, like, have Todd Campbell do a design, because he does excellent work, and it would be attractive. But I kind of like those old signs. You know, they remind me of those little... They'll get close on Hogsback, you know, back at the when I was a child. They were about this high, you know, actually cluster on there. And that's all you had from your death, was these little teeny little posters that have little reflector patches. You know, there's just some things about Boulder that have been there just for eons that are so distinctive about Boulder. But yes, we gave you a sign. It looked bad.
Thank you. Hi, this is Blake Spaulding. I have a few questions because I'm here. I'm representing a number of people, so I can write them down and hand them to you, and you can. Dave Mock has a question, Nicole has a question. So I'm kind of been put in the position of de facto representing the businesses on Highway 12. We are not feeling particularly supported or cared about as a group by the town council currently, or not all of it, most of it, and the mayor. So I guess I want to know, and I've heard some really positive things about business, but I've been asking for months and months for the numbers of how much money the town receives from the businesses in taxes. No one has been able to answer it to me. I have gotten some quasi numbers from Steve, who's guessing based on where he was. But it sounds like it ranges from anywhere from 2/3 to half of the town budget. So my question, not Dave Mock's and not Nicole's, is what if we were to throw our support behind you as candidate? Do you intend to do to help fix the damage, the ethics issues, the lack of trust that has been created around this god-awful pedestrian path that is going to desperately harm most of the businesses that actually are providing money for the town? So that's my first question. Because I really just, like, we tried everything and we can't get any traction. So we're feeling pretty frustrated. And I can string along, sure. The other one, Dave Mock. Okay, one topic. Great. So we'll start there and then I have a couple.
I'm sorry, not feeling love. I have much love for Bull Mountain Lodge and for the restaurant. And as I said before, I'm against this old pedestrian path thing. And I don't know if this is true, but I was told that if we don't get this grant, we might not get other grants. And I think that was holding people hostage and blackmailing people into thinking, oh, we have to get this grant for this project, or we might not get other grants. And like a fear-mongering tactic. I don't think it's necessary. There's a perfectly serviceable trail that goes from the restaurant all the way up to the post office. And it's unneeded. You know, there's a lot more important grants that could be written that would service the town in a much better way. And I don't think, you know, when the town gets so much money from the taxes that they generate from their businesses, and it's significant, if it's 2/3 or half of your budget, I don't know why you'd want to upset those people, because they're supporting the town. And I think that because they support the town so much budgetary wise, that we in turn should support them as a town council.
I think we always have to keep in mind that we work for the people. We're elected by the people. We work for the people. And if you're not being listened to, that's not right. I mean, we should be good listeners. sometimes we have to work within ordinances and policies and procedures that makes it maybe seem like we don't care. In this case, I'm not for the trail. I don't see a benefit for it. The trail was put in there so that we could connect the town to the businesses, and I think it's done its job. It's provided safety. Putting cement on something makes it more unsafe. I mean, it's not a safety issue. We just need to listen to our businesses and to the other people that want to keep Boulder light. When we put the trail in, that's what it was for, was to get people down to the businesses and back safely and no more than that. Yeah. And that's enough. So I'm with you and I will listen. I think I listened to his mayor. I think I listened to his town council. I'll listen to get him final elected.
Thank you.
Wow, this is the bad of my question. So I'm going to start with a little story. A lot of my earliest experience with land use planning was with trails issues in Salt Lake City foothills. And Salt Lake City came up with this great plan for bicycle trails up to the foothills. And when they started building it, all of a sudden there's a hoot, a holler, and a scream about disrespecting the terrain and giving priority to bikes over hikers and so forth. And they ended up taking the plan back and get more community input. And I think that's the key. And I really think that Jim went into that grant application with the best of intentions. But in a process like this where it affects the community character, community input is important. Different stakeholders will bring different perspectives. And I think the idea of an ADA path to Boulder is great, but I'm not sure that we have really, as a community, reached consensus where it should be located, what it should look like. Small details are important to the usability, like is there ADA parking at both ends? Those are important. I think if our elected council, what we need to do is go back to have an open, transparent community process so that all these voices are heard and the problems are articulated in a rational manner, and we try to solve the problems by looking at the facts. I'm not for or against, except for a specific outcome, but I am definitely for an open, transparent process that involves the community and tries to address all the issues that as they're brought up.
So I am for the path, and I keep hearing that it's going to hurt these businesses and things like this. So it's not going to hurt the businesses. For one, there's no parking going to be taken away for the 9,000th time. The pathway goes on the inside, right next to the lodge, right next to the fence. There's still plenty of parking on the outside of it. Goes all the way down to the Birchell Grill. Birchell Grill right now, the parking lot is completely washed out because of all the water that comes down and comes right off of Highway 12. I'm trying to stop all that by putting in the pathway. So right there is the only place that there is actually going to be curb and gutter on the whole entire thing to take the water away from the lodge and away from the Birchell Grill, put it down there. The other day I drove by, there's 27 vehicles on the side of the road in front of the lodge. We need to address that as a town, not just the pathway, the parking for the safety of the town. I almost hit a guy, Kelly Roundy, almost hit a young kid the other day coming out of there. That is a huge problem. The pathway is not a problem right now. The blocking of everything that's down there is the biggest problem we have. The pathway itself, like I said before, it's not taking away the parking. The parking's still going to be there. The amount of parking that everybody still has, no spots are going to be taken. I don't see the problem with trying to say that we are actually hurting the businesses. Every time I hear that, I'm trying to help the businesses out by making it so they can have an actual place to pull in, a safe place to pull in or pull out, or where it carries all the water away like it's supposed to. So that's my path. That's my outlook on path. So.
Being heard is important, right? Like, I guess you're feeling a little bit like Disney World over there. being heard. One thing is having part of the department reports be to like a Chamber of Commerce kind of thing, like as an appointment at the town council, like the members actually check in with the business owners collectively through a representative that they come together in group and appoint, or maybe there's an agenda item every month for any business to come in and a standing agenda item. I mean, those are two kind of super simple things to be heard. But then also, I mean, just, you know, seeking input before you go screwing with the curb appeal of a business is critically important. I mean,
curb appeal or parking, is that the big fight?
Well, they're both.
Nobody owns that road.
Just answer the question.
Well, I don't think, I mean, the parking isn't great curb appeal either, right? You know?
That doesn't appeal.
No.
Please. We have one person asking. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, but there, you know, there clearly hasn't been a productive dialogue. Very clearly. And it would help to even attempt to care to have one instead of telling people what the problem is and how it needs to be solved. That's all I'll say.
Like, I will come back, but I want to see if there's anyone else who has any questions unrelated to this particular subject you wanted to address.
But I already asked one, but I have another one.
Anyone else who has something? The town council and what is the best way for the community members to contact you as candidates in town council? What is the best way for you to be contacted as candidates and or town council members?
Like why?
What's
the best way? Do you want a phone call? Do you want an email?
Email.
Do you want a place on the web? Do you want people to post?
So why? Because I'm a member of the community. And
so you want to call both? Well, I want to know what the best way for you is. If someone wanted to contact you.
Catch me.
Okay, there we go.
I'm going to dance recital, a music event, Aggies and I at Community Market. I try to support all the businesses, all the events, and if that doesn't work, come to my house. I'd be glad to have any of you call me, text me. You know, I've been a mayor. I'm on call, basically. So, anything works, but that's the reason I try to get out and go to events. I want to hear from people in all the different venues what they think is important, and that's the way you do it, is face-to-face when you can. And I've committed to do that the whole time I've been here, is to go to as many events as I can, or doesn't matter where it is, who it is. I think that's the way you hear stuff.
John?
I'll make sure people know what my phone number is. I already take a lot of phone calls. I have a lot of one-on-one conversations with people about a lot of different issues. I think especially in a small town, that's very important. But, you know, I'll give a specific suggestion that we have Jessica set up a email address that's towncouncil@boulder.gov. And that way, if an email is sent, everybody at the town council can see it. Even if it's addressed to one person's question, everybody knows the question was asked. The correspondence is captured for government records purposes. And that would be a very transparent and efficient way that if somebody wants to make an official comment, that it's captured and recorded and responded to in a timely manner.
Easiest way. You can either email me, call my phone, and you can ask anybody that's ever dealt with me I don't answer, I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can, or show up to the house. I don't care. Everybody, I think everybody knows where I live, so.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get paid to be responsive, as it were. So email, phone, landline, cell phone, text is fine. Definitely feel free to show up to my house like half the town does every other day, or see me out and about.
We have time for about two or three more questions. Here is one, and Cookie, and I'll get back to you, Blake, if I don't see any other point.
Yes, my name is Shelley. I call this loud. I'm here myself. Shelley Price. Now it's Lincoln.
Just keep talking.
Okay, I keep talking. Shelley Price Gibson. I'm in Mendenhall. I married my husband almost 5 years ago, and he's been here for a long time.
Talk about me.
Louder. I want to say how proud I am at the beginning of this that we're a community that can communicate. I was just feeling it until, you know, somebody said their perception that they weren't being directed and loved by us. And I am confused by that because I think it's all perception. I think that us as a community look at us here and caring about who's running for council says a lot about us. And that's my question. I have a question. I'm an ethical kind of woman. I've been brought up in Utah, born and raised in Utah, seen it grown. Born and raised in Holiday, Utah, went to only three schools. And my dad was a Marine. My brother is a Lieutenant Colonel. And I have a nephew that is in flight school right now. And I came from a military background that goes back, I don't know how far. Okay, I'm keeping my question. I'm getting there.
Okay.
So I want to, what matters to me in today's field is, you know, I believe in country. I believe in our state. I believe in community and our community here. And ethics is everything to me. And it shows every one of these panel people I would vote for. Josh, I don't know that well. I've heard some things that I question. So my question, I got to say one more thing, though. Judy and Jessica and you and Tina have served this, and John, a lot of people, but they have served and they are doing it by their time. The ethical part of it is, I want to know, when Judy starts her community council, there is a Pledge of Allegiance. And I've been listening to this council. I've missed very few of them. So my question is, they do the Pledge of Allegiance before they start. And would you continue that and know the importance of how unique our country is? And the people that have served for it and died for it, and are we going to continue it in our council and in our planning committee? Is that important to you? And if you know somebody that is flag burned, and I've heard that there has been, that I understand. My brother and my family has fought for people to do that. But if you have done that, is that a problem?
Okay,
two questions, right?
Well, no, I want to add on to this because you have a piece of a question I did want to answer. It does have to do with this
general subject matter.
They will answer. I'm going to form another question here, and it has to do with sense of community. This is really not working, so I will just try to speak loud enough that you can hear me all. Regarding sense of community, I'm wondering where we are now because. We've come out of political divisions. We have come out of the last few years have been horrendous as far as that's concerned. We've had COVID. We've had vaccines with a mask thing. There was a lot of controversy within this town. The path added to that. There's a lot of little subjects that have added to a kind of a schism and
sense of division, which I think we've lost a little sense of community. So I'm just wondering how to get to feel like community again, if in fact we don't feel like we are, which I kind of personally don't. Does the town council have a role to play in this? And I think the answer to your question about the pledge that allegiance feeds into that, if you think that's an element. But
thank you.
How would Boulder be able to regain, if in fact it is lost, a sense of community spirit? And I'll start with Josh.
I've been working trying to do that with the BCA for like 10 years, and it's definitely hurting cats. I think it's really important to come together and be heard, and feel comfortable expressing frustrations. I mean, I appreciate you coming here and speaking about this. I have a radically different perspective on the Pledge of Allegiance than someone that's served in the military. I would say I have no context for your understanding and relationship with the American flag, because I haven't served in the military. And while I deeply value this country and what it represents, I also can recognize that the Pledge of Allegiance was something that some random people invented in a weird time and place in our country. You know, it's not a foundational part of our country. Does it add value? Yeah, I think there's some value to it. I also honestly think it's kind of weird. And I have the right to think that because our country's freaking awesome. And I won't get killed for saying that.
That's right.
And that's the point. You know, that's the point to me. And I think the more we can gather around these issues, whether they're large or small or nitpicky or huge or substantial, and hear each other out and realize that we're all in this together as a community. This is a beautiful community. Look at us. You know, we love this place. We love it. Like, this is our home. We all want to die here. This is why we're here. Like, let's do that together. Let's focus on that. Let's build this a place that we can be in until that happens together. All right, my time's up. Sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah, Gina. yes, but I do agree. It needs to be said. I think it's a huge part of who we are and what we are in the United States. There's a reason we do have it, and there's a reason we do have the flag. And it's the reason I went in the military. Just like Josh said, he won't get shot for that reason, just because of people who went in the military for that reason. There's not a chance in hell that I'd ever burn an American flag unless we're actually putting it down for service. And the amount of how we can get back in together for the town. For one, I think the huge part of the disinformation that there's several people in the town that like to spread it like wildfire, that needs to stop, for one. And it would have an amazing effect on everybody and the different businesses and everything in town. So the disinformation, I think, is one of the biggest things that why we don't feel like we're a town anymore. Just the fact that somebody says something and it gets blown up into the telephone game, and by the end of the thing, nobody knows exactly what the hell anybody's saying. So yeah, the disinformation, if you need to know something, don't ask your neighbor. Talk to the town council person or go online and actually look at the information that's on there. And we won't have the weird content that we do have in between a lot of the different people. So that's my thought on it.
Thank you.
I will kind of tie us back to the Robert's Rules training, which we've talked about. And one of the guidelines is to meetings are in many ways a ceremonial process. Most of the work is done in committees and in the staff reports before, outside the meeting. The meeting is a very formal process, open to the public, on the record. A ceremonial beginning of a meeting is very important in just setting the tone that this isn't a bunch of people sitting around the table talking. We're here to do the town's business according to a set of rules. And that, whether it be a rapping of the gavel by the chair, pledge of allegiance,
a moment of silence. Any of those helps set, as a ritual and ceremonial activity, sets the tone that this is a formal meeting and we need to be at our best behavior.
I've been coming to town council meetings for maybe 40 years on and off, but we've always said the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't remember any town council ever not saying the Pledge of Allegiance. So that will continue, I think, forever as a tradition. It's an honorable thing to do, I think. As far as the flag, and I probably shouldn't give this away, shouldn't I? Because people think elves put up the flags on the pavilion for holidays. Not elves. So when you see the flags flying at the pavilion, you'll know who had a part of that. So, and I think as far as ethics, town council, mayor, we need to model ethics. We need to be honest. We need to be trustworthy. We can't violate our own ordinances. We can't lie to the public. We just can't. We have to be ethical. If we're going to want other people to be ethical, we have to model that. And that comes from, being a teacher. If you wanted your students to be good citizens, you modeled being a good citizen. And so that's what you do as a town council member.
Any?
This meeting is starting to remind me of the town council meeting. I think as a nation, there's creeping the lack of patriotism. And I think that the Pledge of Allegiance helps us to be patriotic and to honor the flag. And I respect Josh's feelings on what he said, because he has the right to feel those feelings. And nobody should judge him because he might feel differently. But I do think that the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag are very important. This is my combat pin I'm wearing tonight. And that's my subtle way of remembering that I served this country in a war. I didn't know my head from a hole in the ground, but I served. When Dale LaFever was the bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints here in town, I would oftentimes do the Christmas party, and I would try to get everybody involved. Is that right, Tina? I try to get everybody involved, and I would do this like two times in a row. I did Christmas around the world, so I asked people, come and did you cook for me one year? Yeah. So I would say, what was your Swedish? Anyway, so I would ask different community members, hey, can you prepare this food? Martin did Mexican food, and we had Australian food. And, so I tried to, because there shouldn't be this division in town between the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and people who aren't members. I love it when we have the potluck, that people actually come to potluck, because it truly is supposed to be a community thing. It's not a church thing. I mean, if you're opposed to prayer, I guess you can, bless down the food, you can put your fingers in your ears. But because I believe that we should all work together, and we shouldn't ostracize the church members, because they're all self-righteous and stuffed shirts and blah, no fun, blah, 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 blah. Whatever might be said, and I'm sure that church members are saying icky things about people who aren't church members. But the key thing is that we're all brothers and sisters, literally, in this town. I want to write a piece about, if you put a roof on Boulder, we'd be family. Because I look at all of us is that we're just one big, gigantic family. So
You know, if you're offended, tell somebody that, hey, what you said bothered me. And they might not even meant to offend you. You know, if you're outraged by something you heard through the grapevine, go, Jimmy, check the facts. You know, but we need more peacekeepers and less people who want to fight over nitpicking things that aren't important.
I'm lying right now because it's 8:03 and I've gone over already, but Cookie, you did want to have, is it a kind of a shorty question?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure this thing is.
I'll just say it fast.
Just say it loud because I want the recording. I want the recording to hear
that microphone right there. Okay, I can stand up and talk really loud.
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay.
I don't have credentials that I could go through and say my parents were this and that. I just want to say that I feel.
Don't scare her though. Okay. I think I need to adjust this.
Yeah. I just want to say that I love this community. We've been here 20 years. Jimmy has bailed us out and his dad, everybody. Steve has bailed us out. Cindy inadvertently bailed us out a couple times. I feel love, actually, for this community. And what I don't like is divisions, the same as everybody has been saying. So what I would like to hear, and I'm sorry she's not here, but I would like to hear what the people from the grill have to say, the Bird Trail Grill. And I would like to hear that because I don't know Nicole very well and I don't go out to dinner very often. But I love the fact that we have businesses in town that support local as well as freaking tourists, you know? So there you go.
So that was more of a comment than a question, right? So
I wanted to hear what Nicole has.
Well, is that a question or a comment? Because you can see where we have a lot to talk about as a community. And I think town council has the responsibility and the obligation to listen to members of the community. So whether it's in the public comments sections of the meetings that happen, you know, that's one way you can publicly get your comment out. Certainly what these guys have said as far as personally contacting anyone who's on the potential town council or the existing town council can make a phone call, a text, an email, and get your specific question out and heard. But I do agree that I think that there is this is my personal opinion now. I'm taking the floor. I do think there is a role to have in having more of these kinds of functions where people can get together as a group and talk about subjects. You know, maybe not like across the board, pick a topic, invite people, and hold a forum, and the councils come in or participate in the forum. But we are a small community despite our growth, and we do have the capability of getting together as a group and talking about these things. And I think we need more of that. So I apologize. I think this could keep going into a nice dialogue, but it's not kind of what it's set up for. If you want to carry on and they're willing to after the fact, but I have to call the deal as far as the question and answer thing is concerned right now. But thank you all for. So anyway. Yeah, you're welcome to leave. If anyone wants a Miller Lite, but the recording is stopped. And thank you again for your. Yeah.